Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well, here we go. What a difference a day makes. Kelly Kirsch talking hockey for one full hour. Peter Klein in after 1 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Busy show. We're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to hear from Ryan Reeves, who had a really interesting, very interesting weekend. And I'll tell you, he was very brave. And we're going to hear from him from the Las Vegas Golden Knights, obviously. And also going to hear a little Kraft Hockeyville, a little deal. It's time for that again. So the voting process is about to begin. But first, let's talk about last night's game with Peter Loubardias.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Lou, playoff hockey is up and down for the players, for the coaches, for the media, and for the fans, and that's just...
It sure is.
That's the way it goes, and, you know, people said this would be a tight series, and it's 2-1 Flames, and we thought last night's game was big. Well, wait till tomorrow night, because that's going to be big, too. Your thoughts as you had a little time to kind of digest the game and how it went for the Flames last night?
Well, I love how you brought it up, because that's what makes it special, talking about playoff hockey. It's also what makes it difficult, because as much as you want to predict it and break it down and analyze it, you really have to, Kelly, have a short memory. And short memory means if you get all focused in on what didn't go right, then it's harder to do right. And on the other hand, if you give yourself too much credit for what you do right and don't pay enough attention to what areas you can be better in, then you can pay the price. And isn't that what we've seen in this whole series through three games?
Yeah.
We saw a team unbelievably prepared, dialed in, ready to do different in game one. And I still think in terms of them having long-term playoff success, even more than yesterday, I still like game number one better than yesterday in some regards, because I think it's going to take more of that if they're lucky enough to get past this round when I think about facing some of the challenges ahead. But no point doing that, because they're a long way from getting to that. So they had a setback in game two, but in game three, what did they do? They were resilient again. They gave up the first goal again. I think we'd all like to see them maybe score that first goal once in a while, just to see what it would be like that way. But 18 seconds after they gave up the opening goal, they scored a power play goal. They needed to be better on the power play. Well, they went 3-for-4. You can't really be much better than that. All your top six forwards played a massive role in terms of point production, for sure. And how good was your goalie? Well, according to head coach Jeff Ward, when asked after the game who his best player was in the game, he didn't talk about Michael Backlund or Matthew Tkachuk or Sean Monahan. Who did he talk about, Kelly? He talked about Cam Talbot. And to do well in the playoffs, yes, you need your best people to be your best people. And yesterday that was the case. But coming into this series, isn't it funny? The Winnipeg Jets expected to have this massive, massive goaltending advantage. And guess what? The series isn't over. Let's be clear. So they still might. But you answer this question. Who's been the better goalie so far? Cam Talbot or Connor Hellebuck?
It's Cam Talbot. And I know people are saying, oh, don't jinx it and let Connor Hellebuck play
right
the way he has. I don't think that has anything to do with it, obviously.
No.
But let's face it, Connor Hellebuck comes in. He's the Vezina Trophy favorite, and he has not given those two games. There, you know, that one goal the Flames scored, where he basically kicked it out in front. That's on him, right? That's 100% his fault. Where Cam hasn't. I think most of the goals have been, you know, I don't know if anybody would stop them. So I mean, the goaltending battle has gone advantage Calgary. Series not over yet, obviously.
No, and to me that kind of provides a couple of lessons. And those lessons are what you maybe put together for that season with a 4.5 month pause. Do those numbers mean anything today? They don't.
No.
Now, might they, though, before this series is over? Sure. And in fact, after the game yesterday, Connor Hellebuyck didn't guarantee a Winnipeg win tomorrow, but he all but guaranteed that he would be at his best. And the Calgary Flames haven't had to deal with that. But you know what? That's the lesson, too. The Calgary Flames' job is to be the best version of the Calgary Flames. And Cam Talbot has absolutely 100% delivered on the decision that Jeff Ward and the staff made. What did they want him to do? Be calm. Be solid. Do a good job playing the puck. Settle down your group when things get a little untracked in your own zone. He stopped 74 of 80, save percentage 925 during his playoff career, albeit he's played in 18 NHL playoff style games. His save percentage is 923. Has he had to win games single-handedly? No. But has he been the best version of Cam Talbot? He sure as heck has. And to this point, every time your team and your individuals line up against the guy at the other end and win, that enhances your chances of being successful. And so far, and I know people are going, Lou, stop. It's going to turn. It's going to change. Like you said, don't jinx it. Well, all I can talk about today is assess what I've seen. And Cam Talbot has been excellent. Jeff Ward has noticed. And so has assistant coach Ryan Huska.
You have a good feeling on the bench knowing that if there is a breakdown, he's got this taken care of. And really for the first three games, he's been that way. So if you go back and look at his body of work, probably from Christmas on until the stall or the pause in our season, his game was really coming along. He was giving us a chance to win every night, sometimes stealing games for us, and he's carried on that momentum right now. So I don't think there's anything flashy about his game. Positionally, he's been sound. He's made the big saves when he's needed to, and he's given our guys the confidence that they know that if there is a mistake being made in front of him, we got a guy in there right now that's feeling good about himself, and he's going to back us up.
There's Flames assistant coach Ryan Huska talking about Cam Talbot, who has been, you know, for three games, he has done his job. That's what you expected, and, you know, that's all you really can expect. We talked about the power play, Lou, yesterday, and we were, like, wringing our hands talking about how they can, you know, get better looks and all that kind of stuff, and the power play, once again, helps them out big time as they respond right away in the first period with a really nice tip, and it's just one of those things that if everybody knew how the power play would work from game to game, and it was just you do the same thing all the time, it'd be easy. But it's not easy. It's very hard to score in the NHL. But the Flames had that power play going and had the Jets on the run.
But like Cam Talbot, Kelly, when the process and the work is good, how are the results?
Good, great.
They're good. Yesterday they weren't good. They were great. They were 3 out of 4 on the power play, and it won them in many ways the hockey game. And what the power play also does, and chatted with Ryan Huska about this yesterday on the post game show, is that for your best players, it can either really add to their confidence or it can really, really hinder them in game. When your best guys are feeling it, not only does it help your power play, but it helps their overall game, their 5-on-5 game. They just feel more energized because, Kelly, no matter what we do for a living, when we feel like we're making a contribution, how do we feel? We feel better.
You feel engaged.
And when we're expected to make a contribution and what is expected of us isn't being received or not netting the type of results, that's when it's hard for all of us to process and actually do it the right way. That's what challenges us. That, to me, is the Johnny Gaudreau story in a nutshell. Great game, lots of success, and then somebody came along and said, you know what? We're going to make it hard for you. And you're going to question the work. You're going to question how much fun it is until you probably dig a little deeper, do a little different. And so game 1, power play, 2 goals. game two, not only were they 0 for 6, but I think it really hindered momentum and it hindered their top people. But yesterday, they did it the right way and they made great decisions with the puck. And even, Kelly, they didn't necessarily win all the power play faceoffs, but they won key ones. And it wasn't just the centermen that win faceoffs. It's the help from your wingers. A lot of loose pucks. So who jumps in, who gets to the inside, and now who wins possession? Because winning faceoffs a lot of time is not just about the two centermen, it's how they are supported. And on key faceoffs yesterday that led to some power play success, that's what the Flames did. Power plays are about faceoffs, controlling faceoffs, then puck retrieval, and the decisions that you make with the puck. And the Flames were excellent in all three and getting traffic to the front of the net, making it difficult. Great decisions, good faceoffs, excellent retrieval, 3 for 4, and a massive reason they win the game. And it also kick-started a lot of their key players who figured immensely in those goals. Let's see if head coach Jeff Ward saw it the same way.
I thought that our power play had a huge bounce back tonight. Credit goes to our power play coaches and players. I mean, Ray Edwards, Marty Jelena do a great job with our power play. And I thought our players, you know, did a really good job in terms of just being more prepared for what we were going to see. I thought they were quicker with movement. I thought our decisions on entries were better. I thought we were better to start with the puck. And I thought we were able to put ourselves in positions where we were able to beat pressure better than we did in the last game. So saying all that, it's just one game, but I thought the response from our power play people was good today. And obviously it was a huge factor in the hockey game.
There you go, Coach Jeff Ward on the Flames power play. You know, Lou, this is not maybe scientific. You had like 3 or 4 things that power play has to do. I always just see if the passes are fast and crisp and they are really working it around quickly and making decisions like just split second. And sometimes you see that. When you see that, if you give the opposition, the penalty killers, time to react in the NHL, they're going to react and fire it down the ice. And the Flames are on their game. The opposition doesn't have time to make those decisions.
Well, they don't have time, but Kelly, the whole game in every aspect is who dictates to who. So if your work and your process and your plan is executed at a high level, let's be even simpler. You have one more player on the ice than the other team does, which should give you an advantage. That's why they call it a power play. But what do you do with your plan to take care of the plan that is set out against you? And who executes that way more often and more effective leads you to better power play chances. Can you get the penalty killing group out of its structure with all of those things, with the retrieval, with face-off wins, with traffic? And winning battles, really important, Kelly. The one thing is, yes, puck movement is really, really important. But can you get somebody out of their structure with it? And when you shoot a puck, can you recover it? Because you should, in a sense, be able to. You have one more player on the ice than they do. But do you do it? That's one thing about power plays that can never not be thought of. Your ability to A, start with it because you've done a good job on the faceoff, and how do you recover it even in zone after you move around and eventually you're going to shoot it? Because the longer you make that group of four or group of three work, it gets more difficult. Kelly, when you think about hard minutes in a game, I will tell you this. Power play minutes, by and large, those are easy. Those are fun minutes. Defending power plays, that's not fun. So the longer you keep somebody hemmed in there with possession, it's going to open up all those passing lanes because it is hard work to stay in that structure.
We're chatting with Peter Labardius. It is a Flames win last night, 6-2. They go up 2-1 in the best of five against the Winnipeg Jets in the qualifying round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We have game number four coming up tomorrow night. Coverage all day and play-by-play with Peter and Derek will go about 8:30, 8:45, somewhere in there. As you know, the game times are all over the map here, and that's just the way it goes. And I think it's one of those things you analyze the game, you see how it's going. Our listeners are very savvy as to what's going on the ice, and lots of people were commenting on our text line and also in on the overtime call-in show about the Backlund line. Michael Backlund came to play last night, as did Matthew Tkachuk and Andrew Mangiapane, who was starting. Maybe this might be his coming out party a little bit because he has shown that he is truly an NHLer. Give me your thoughts on what you saw from that line as they were creating havoc on both ends of the ice.
Kelly, you've heard this more than you want to. What do I say about Michael Backlund and this team?
As he goes, the team goes.
When he's an excellent two-way player, this team doesn't lose very often. And that was the case again yesterday. He had 2 points. I thought the line was exceptional. If we go back to game number two, we talked yesterday at noon or whatever time it was. It's confusing because of game times. But we talked yesterday about if the Calgary Flames, without all the key pieces missing in the Jets lineup, have an advantage, then don't your groups need to take advantage? Well, that to me is what happened, especially in the second period. The Backlund line started to dictate every time they were out. So now it gives me an advantage, talking about the team, talking about Jeff Ward, and how Paul Maurice and his group has to go about their business. And they dictated, and they did it with their work, and they finished. They were part of the power play, and yes, I love Michael Backlund when he's playing that well, but it was every bit as much about the feisty, drag you in, Matthew Tkachuk, and let's not undervalue the worker bee. Andrew Mangiapane, 2 more assists, great on the forecheck, good as the F2 on the forecheck where the first guy goes in, and you know what your job is, Kelly? Your job as the F2 in hockey is to beat your guy to the spot where the loose puck lies after the original contact is made by the F1. That's the first forechecker. Mangiapane wins so many of those battles, retrieves it, found Tkachuk for one of the goals. They really gave the Calgary Flames an advantage throughout the lineup. When that line is good, and I know that, you know, and I'm not criticizing, I get it, I'm in the minority, how we look at lines and how we number them and top line and this and whatever, right now this is their top line. You want to put them as number one, two, three, or four, you decide. But this line has shown us this season, especially the back half and in the playoffs, that when they're really good, they just make this such a harder team to deal with. That was the case yesterday. Michael Backlund knew it, and he was quick, though, to give a lot of credit to one of those line mates.
Oh, he's a gritty player with a ton of skill, so, and a smart player. He's easy to play with, so I thought he took another step today in today's game. I thought we saw, you know, Chucky at his best. So he had a big, really solid game tonight. He's been very effective, also, like you said, the whole series. But I thought today was his best game, and you know, he's a very important player for us.
There you go, Michael Backlund on Andrew Mangiapane. And the thing is, with that line, you can put them out in just about any situation, can't you? No matter which side of the rink you're on or whatever, right?
That's how you gain advantage, Kelly. I love where you're going with this. That's how you gain advantage, because the best lines in hockey are reliable and trustworthy. And no matter the matchup, no matter the players that they're playing against, they don't always have to win those matchups. But you know what you can't do? Top lines become top lines in a lot of ways and very trustworthy because they don't lose a lot of those matchups. And thus, whether it's them taking care of their own business or how it sets up other groups, that really makes a difference. And yesterday was a perfect example of that. No matter who they were matched against, they were a handful. And when you're a handful, you know what you become? You become another team's problem. And now they have to deal different. They have to change some of their plan. So I'll give you a perfect example. In the playoff series against the Colorado Avalanche, when did the Flames with their groupings really cause the Avalanche to change their thinking or their doing last spring?
That is a good question. It was only for one game. What do you mean?
And even in that game, did the Flames ever really dictate with their best people to the Avalanche? Or did the Avalanche as a team right. dictate
Oh,
to
it's
the
a
Flames?
Trick question from Lou. They didn't do it there. That's what you mean.
Yes, no, they didn't do it. But yesterday, they did do it. And not only is that good for that line and the scoreboard, but now it also sets up your other lines to be more effective because now, if I'm Paul Maurice and the Backlund line is really going, well, now that occupies how I go about my business. Now I'm being dictated to. And the more a team can dictate and win matchups, I like your chances at the end of the game to be on the right side of the, as our dear friend Peter Maher talked about, the win column.
There you go. A few other points to kind of go over the game. The Bennett hit on Perreault, but, you know, Brian Burke was yakking about it, and I thought it was a hard hit. I thought it was a playoff hit. I don't think that's suspendable or fine anything. What did you see?
The only thing somewhat in question was it a little late? Was it a little late? Yeah. I thought it was more shoulder to shoulder. Was it a tad late? So that's the only gray area. And I guess what I heard Brian say is a little late, and I'm not sure if he used the word predatory or not. That's generally not Brian, and I didn't, Kelly, hear exactly what Brian had to say in the hit. But if there was anything in question, it just might be, was it a little late? And because a player was hurt, that always kind of is part of the equation, isn't it?
Yeah, it does have something. And there were some bodies going down big time. Jets had a couple of guys go down, and Flames had a kind of a nasty deflection. Forbert got it right off of Cam Talbot's deflection there, and that's just, you just don't like seeing that ever. It's just that much more gruesome where, guys can get injured.
Tucker Poolman, you ever wonder about players' courage and want to do well and be a part of it in the playoffs? Just go back and watch the video of Tucker Poolman. If that isn't a badge of honor, I'm not sure. Like, what more could you do to tell your teammates you're all in?
Yeah.
That was some. There he is on the bench. Lord only knows how he's managing the pain. The right side of his face looks like a softball. He's got a mask on. And as he's sitting at the bench, and I hope you're done lunch, but and you might not be, but there's still, like half an hour later, blood trickling down his neck.
Yeah.
That is something else.
Which I thought you weren't allowed to do. I thought that was a thing that you're not supposed to. Oh, we just got a goal here. Islanders 3-2. As Florida's looking for their first playoff win since 2016. So that's a little breaking news for you. What else can I ask you? I mean, now they have a little time off, you know, relative, because they played a lot of hockey, kind of jammed up both teams.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be interesting who can dial it up again. And this is where the coaches earn their money. This is where the players, all those cliches we dig out. It's like, what happens in this chapter? People said it would be a long series. And who knows what Winnipeg can dial up, because they are going to be, if you thought you got their best in game two, you're going to get more, because a desperate team with an amazing goalie and that's well coached, doesn't matter who's in their lineup or not, it's going to be wild stuff.
Do your best as the Calgary Flames to respond to a very similar situation in game four than you did in game two. Build on yesterday, get your rest, and be ready. Don't just talk about being ready to respond to the most desperate Jets effort you've seen. Be ready to dictate to the Jets, because you're even more dialed in and desperate than they are. If the Flames are that way, I think we're going to get a chance to focus on looking ahead to what will be a terrific opponent in the official round one of the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs.
Oh, it's awesome. We got a two games for you guys tonight and then tomorrow, and I think we got stuff on Friday settled. It's going to be wild, just the way we like it. Who knew August was going to be so awesome?
Great.
Yeah,
good stuff. I can't, honestly, there aren't enough hours in the day or TV screens or time to get it all in.
Lou, I've got a surprise for everybody tomorrow. So yes, it's about Lou's segment. I'm not going to say it now, but tune in tomorrow. A bit of a surprise.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
and nobody is more curious for all kinds of reasons than the guy on the other end of this phone call.
All I'll say, it's delicious. Lou, enjoy your Wednesday.
Yes. Thanks. Have a good one.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Oh, my goodness. We got lots going on. We get Montreal-Pittsburgh tonight at 6, followed by Edmonton and Chicago. So nonstop hockey for your driving around tonight, for sure. Coming up, we'll hear from Ryan Reeves from the Golden Knights, and we'll also talk a little bit about something special coming up. It's Kraft Hockeyville, and we'll get the scoop on that and how you can participate. That's next on Hockey Central at Noon.
Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's Kelly Kirsch making way for Peter Klein at 1 o'clock. Busy show here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We'll hear from Ryan Reeves from the Las Vegas Golden Knights coming up in just a little bit. But first, we wanted to talk a little bit about Kraft Hockeyville. You saw it on Hockey Night in Canada. They got down to the final four, as it were. And we're going to talk about this contest and how you can become involved. We've got Matt Bruce, who is the senior brand manager for Kraft Heinz. Matt, how are you? Is he there? Can't hear him.
Hello?
Hey there, Matt. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
How you doing today?
Good, good. How are you?
Well, we're awesome. Tell us about, you got down to the final four here. It's been strange times for everybody here in 2020, but Hockeyville continues. You've got the final four communities, only one from Western Canada. And since we're based in Calgary, we'll talk a little bit about Penn, Saskatchewan. But tell us about how you came up with the final four that will compete for the grand prize.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Kraft Hockeyville every year is about that search for Canada's most passionate hockey community. And, you know, the program unites the spirit and passion of Canadian hockey communities with the heart and soul of Canada's game, which we all know is the local hockey arena in communities all across our country. It's year 14 of the program, working with the NHL and the NHLPA. And as you said, it's interesting times. And, you know, unfortunately we had to pause our top four announcement by close to 4 months, but you know, we were thrilled to get that announcement out there on Sunday night during the first intermission of the Leafs game. So, yeah, as you mentioned, top four finalists, Penn, Saskatchewan, St. Félicien, Quebec, Tyne Valley, Prince Edward Island, Twillingate, Newfoundland, and Labrador. And all these communities are competing for $250,000 in arena upgrades, as well as the opportunity to host an NHL preseason game. So each of these top four communities is now guaranteed at least the runner-up prize, which is $25,000 in arena upgrades, which is a great start to their renovations as well.
It is, and I mean, in these arenas, as you said, are the lifeblood of the community, and a lot of them, like I'm I'm from Saskatchewan originally, and I mm-hmm. remember playing at that Pence Arena, and I'm just wondering, has it gotten any upgrades in the past, you know, 30 years? I'm not sure if it has or not. So people mm-hmm. really need this. You know what, Matt? We were up, how many years ago? We were up in Sylvan Lake, and we did the game up there when the Flames played yeah. the Coyotes. And yep. There was a serious, you know, push on from the crew up there to get that, you know, get some help with their arena. It was magical how many people they jammed into that rink, and not just yeah. for the night. The night's pretty cool where you get a preseason game and that kind of stuff. But just maybe talk about kind of the living legacy where this money really helps out. You know, they aren't cheap, the arenas, to maintain and to rebuild and all that kind of stuff and to upgrade. That $250,000 would certainly help out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, like you said, I mean, the NHL preseason game is great. The memories last a lifetime. But, you know, what we're thrilled about is being able to help out these communities, not only on that day of the event, but for years and years to come. And, you know, you said it in Sylvan Lake in 2014 is a great example where, you know, these communities that end up winning the grand prize are in desperate need of funding. And unfortunately, you know, the funding coming in at the government level isn't able to fix everything that's needed to keep these expensive facilities up and running. So, yeah, the $250,000 goes a long way to making sure that these hubs in each of these communities are well and thriving. And, yeah, for Pence specifically, I know they have some specific repairs in terms of they need a new brine system to keep the ice going for years to come. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to the voting opening next Friday at 9 a.m. It'll be open for just about a day and a half, so it closes Saturday night at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And then the winner announcement will be made later that evening on Hockey Night in Canada during the 8 p.m. NHL game, and we're still waiting to see who's going to be playing in that game, but nonetheless, really looking forward to crowning another Kraft Hockeyville.
So time is tight. So how do people, where do they go? What do they do? You know, vote for whoever mm-hmm. you want, whether you're a proud former Newfoundlander or from mm-hmm. PEI or from Quebec or a good old Western Canadian person that wants to vote for Pence. How do they do it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to crafthockeyville.ca. You can check out each of the communities. There's a video that was prepared by Sportsnet on there. You can learn about each of the communities, read their stories, and educate yourself leading up to the voting period, which opens again next Friday, August 14th. And once voting is open, you have the ability to vote as many times as you want during that period. So voting is unlimited, and we encourage you to spread the word with your family and friends. And, you know, when the voting ends on August 15th at 6 p.m., whoever has the most votes will be crowned Kraft Hockeyville 2020.
Okay, well, that's awesome, Matt. Thanks for taking the time out. Best of luck with it. We'll get you on once we crown a winner.
Perfect. Thanks a lot for having me.
There we go. As Kraft Hockeyville is coming up right here. So there you go. Get to the website and vote for who you want. Pence, Saskatchewan. There's also St. Felicien in Quebec, Tyne Valley in Prince Edward Island, and Twillingate in Newfoundland. So there you go. All right, we'll take a break and hear from Ryan Reeves from the Las Vegas Golden Knights to hear what, that was courageous, and he's been vocal, and it's very interesting as Black Lives Matter is huge for the National Hockey League here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll hear from Ryan next right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Game 4, Flames can move on if they win. It is tomorrow night. We'll be all over that game as we get ready for it tomorrow night, face-off. A little after 8:30, we've got it right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Inside hockey coming up later on today. It's all for Calgary Co-op. The beer tastes better when it's bought from the place that cheers for your team. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, and beer today. So that is coming up with Steinberg and Klein a little bit later right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. In case you missed it, there was interesting, I don't want to call it a protest, a movement, starting the conversation. We saw some players kneel for the national anthems when Dallas and Vegas were playing one of their tune-up games up in Edmonton. So we wanted to hear from Ryan Reeves, who he's been one of those good guys in the NHL and has been vocal on a few different things. And they interviewed him on Hockey Central out in Toronto. So we wanted to hear from Ryan Reeves and talk about that starting the conversation?
Did it because, you know, in hockey, there's not a lot of people that are going to do that. And the conversation needs to be started in hockey. And I think, you know, the whole point of the kneeling is, you know, the kneeling isn't going to, you know, directly incite the change, but it's going to start the conversation for change. Me and Lenny had a conversation and thought that, you know, we were two people that could start that conversation up. So moving forward, you know, me and Lenny and other guys are going to start talking about what we can do to help out with this movement, for sure. It's going to be a little tougher when you're stuck in a bubble, but, you know, you better believe that it's not just, you know, I'm going to take a knee and then I'm done with it. There's got to be some wheels that are put in motion after that.
Yeah, it was great to see Robin Lehner involved, and then the conversation with the media afterwards, and then Tyler Seguin on the other side. You guys obviously had a conversation, and you were on record before the game as having that conversation. Apparently not the case with Matt Dumba, who again raised his fist during the anthem yesterday, and the Wild have said that, yeah, no, we haven't discussed it. We've talked about eliminating racism, but there's been no discussion about anybody joining with him. Do you think communication about the protest that you're going to do on that day is important, especially with your teammates, and that you can even reach across the aisle to the opposition? And do you find that a little bizarre that the Wild have not really communicated with Dumba about what he's doing?
I mean, I was in communication with my teammates and the right people within the organization. I can't speak for what happened with Dums. I didn't really know that any of that was going on. I don't know what kind of communication, and you know, hey, there could have been, and maybe you know, they're just not telling you. But I can't speak for what happened with Dums for sure.
So, you know, you mentioned that it's hard to incite change when you're in a bubble, but so much of this is just about talking, right, and taking people outside of their comfort zone. And I do wonder whether or not actually being in a bubble environment where guys are together constantly and you are seeing players from other teams, if it actually is more conducive to starting conversations, if it's easier for guys to be able to actually sit down, have a one-on-one and talk. You mentioned that, you know, you're talking with your teammates, that you and Leonard decided to make this decision. Have you found that other guys have been coming up to you? Again, I'm not asking you to name names, but have you found that you have been talking more with guys around the league about issues regarding race than you had before?
I mean, and I think just overall, because the conversation's been started since, you know, the George Floyd incident, you know, I think conversation has been started, and for sure, you know, after that happened a couple of days ago, I talked to a couple of teammates, you know, guys that I've never talked to about race before. You know, we've had quick conversations. A couple of guys, you know, most guys have come up and said, you know, we support what you're doing, and we believe in what you're doing. And you know, there's definitely been some backlash too, and I knew that was going to come with the territory. You know, a lot of people obviously not happy with the military aspect of it, but you know, I think I tried to make it very clear that in no way do I disrespect the military. I have nothing but the utmost respect for all that, for all that they do for this country. But you know, this was a decision that I made for change in a different area, and I think it was just something that was necessary to start the conversation within the NHL.
Yeah, I think that we're at least getting to a point where people are not making that confusion, that they're not drawing those lines between kneeling and the military. I think that there's going to be a crowd of people that always do, but again, it's people who aren't really listening. But you know, the reason I kind of bring that up just about conversations amongst teammates and players is that I remember we talked to Devontae Smith-Pelly when he decided to skip the White House, and he didn't want to go, and he said, frankly, that a lot of his teammates didn't get it. And he didn't really elaborate on that, about kind of what that meant. I think it was only Holtby that actually joined him in not going to the White House. Maybe I'm forgetting somebody else. But just that, yeah, he was a little disappointed, and that was the quote, that his teammates didn't get it. Do you feel like there are a lot of guys that are actually opening up their eyes a little bit and understanding a little bit more as to what it means to be not just a black person in North America, but also just a black player in the NHL, a league that is predominantly white?
Well, I think with all the conversations that have been started, I think guys are starting to open their eyes a little bit. look, you can't, I can't expect a white guy to understand what a black guy has gone through in their life, you know, in regards to racism, because let's be honest, white people don't go through racism. That's just not part of their life. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, I can't sit there and say, you know, it sucks because you don't get it. Well, you don't get it because you haven't lived it. And it's tough for you to understand something you haven't lived. So I don't hold that against anybody. I think it's good that the conversations are starting so people can start to learn and start to somewhat get it. But, you know, it's very hard to expect them to understand that because it's never happened to them firsthand.
Talking to Ryan Reeves, and yeah, we've all been impressed with what you've done and the conversations you've had after these peaceful protests, and I expect obviously for that to continue for you. You don't have a game today. You guys have a game tomorrow. You played one. You played three of these seeding games. You've seen games with actual stakes played as well. What is it like to play in these games where, yeah, sure, you want to win them and you guys are 1-0, sure, let's win all three, but yeah, the stakes can't be the same as, you know, a five-game series, and if you lose it, you're out of the bubble. What's it been like to play in these games?
Well, you know, it's just funny because, like, you guys all keep saying, yeah, you know, you want to win, but you don't. Well, no, we want to win. You know, it's just like fighting for the first place seed in, at the end of the regular season. You know, those games matter because you're playing the lower seed. So, yeah, while it's not the same repercussions, the loss isn't the same repercussions as, you know, getting kicked out of the bubble, well, it's still, you know, we want to win the Stanley Cup and we want the easiest route there. So these games definitely matter. And, you know, our games have been intense. I think you know, we've treated them like a playoff game, and I expect us to continue to do so.
Yeah, and well, I think that the reason we do it, though, is that because there's so much parity in the NHL that if you just look across the league, there, I know that there are some groups that are in there that shouldn't be in the playoffs. Like, we have the 24th rated team. That's not a normal year. So yeah, if you're higher, there is the potential to face one of those groups. But that also means that they beat somebody that is deserving. And again, that speaks to the parity in the league. So you guys are battling, and I believe you when you say that you are treating these like seeding games. But ultimately, the move forward, if you really want to have a competitive advantage as the top teams, is to take luck out of the equation entirely. Would you be down as a player if they let you guys pick your opponent moving forward? Like, if part of the new playoff format was, okay, Golden Knights, you finished first in the West, you get first pick to see who you play in the first round.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say I'd be opposed to that. I don't know if it'd be the fairest way to do it, but yeah, best believe if we finished first, I would never say no to that.
There we go. Ryan Reeves from the Las Vegas Golden Knights chatting about some heavy stuff and some lighter stuff as well, as Ryan is always so well-spoken, even with his days back at junior at the Brandon Wheat Kings. He was always a good interview, and he still is, as he talks about the protests that he was involved with the Golden Knights game and Dallas Stars there a couple days ago. So good stuff from him. Wanted to play that as it was on Hockey Central out in Toronto earlier. Busy in the NHL today. This is like, I don't know, when baseball playoffs, so they just play all during the day and all night. It's just so much hockey. It's crazy. Florida wins their first playoff game since 2016. They stay alive. They beat the Islanders 3-2. The Islanders still lead that series 2-1. And partial score, Arizona on the board first, 1-0. And Riley, the big story in this is that the Arizona Coyotes are wearing those classic jerseys that they went to Phoenix with the goofy-looking desert dog on the front. So they've gone to the historical look. What do you think?
Yeah, those, I really like those.
You do?
Yeah, I'm okay. A fan of them.
Okay, so they've gone with the historical look. Now, they don't have a lot of great playoff prowess in those jerseys, but they are wearing them anyway, and so far so good. So yep. I don't know.
And Nashville's out shooting them 12-2, 8 minutes in, and Arizona's winning. So what? Some luck so far.
Yeah, and so later today, the games just keep coming. There's a couple qualifying round robin. Colorado and Dallas goes 4:30 our time, 2:00 Tampa Bay, Boston. But obviously people want to know about the games that really matter. Pittsburgh, Montreal, we'll have that game for you at 6:00 right after Pinder and Steinberg. That series tied at 1, and then we'll go right into the Edmonton Oilers, Chicago Blackhawks game. Might join that one in progress. We'll see how it goes. And that series is tied at one as well. So it's best of five, man. This is very interesting stuff. Want to tell you about Big Brothers and Big Sisters. The All Stars for Kids campaign is back. And you can be an everyday all-star. We've done this a few years. We've done so many cool things with Big Brothers, Big Sisters over the years. Donate today and support life-changing mentoring programs for kids facing adversity. All month long, every donation will be matched dollar for dollar, doubling your gift and your impact. Very easy to do. You can link off our website, or you can just go to allstarsforkids.ca and help out that way. What do the guys got coming up, Riley? After 1 o'clock, Peter Klein joins things. What's happening? What's the story?
Well, not sure about the 1 o'clock yet.
What?
We're getting. I'm getting texts as they come here.
Oh,
but
putting the show. We're ablibbing the show. Kirsch doesn't like that.
We. I know that we have Wild Card Wednesday at some point in the 3 o'clock.
So some awkwardness in the 3 o'clock hour.
And. We got Jeff Schneider, I believe, in the
Schneid, it's
3 o'clock hour as well, and Jonathan Davis at some point after five. So
we'll be busy. Obviously, hockey heavy as well.
Yeah,
Blue Jays in Atlanta. That game will go on Sportsnet a little after 5 o'clock. So just Blue Jays baseball is going to have to take a little bit of a back seat here on Sportsnet 960 while the Flames in the NHL are going. But we'll try and get the Jays on. They got that, you know, they got clobbered last night, 10-1. So we'll see. What happens with their high-priced pitcher that they spent all that money on that's been no good for the first two starts? But, hey, it's a brand-new day, so we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, and just keep in mind, we have a survey on the old website. Love you to take it. Go to sportsnet.ca/960. When you're noodling around there, just go to the old events tab, and there's a survey you can take, and we ask all kinds of personal questions about the station. But it really is what we need from you guys to tell us what you like and what you don't like. And we've been doing, you know, obviously we have our listener panels that we can't really do now because of COVID and that sort of thing. We're not getting together anytime soon. So this is kind of the old school way. So if you can help us out, I think it's up till the 24th of August. So head down to the old website and do your worst there. We appreciate it. Okay. We're going to take a little bit of a break. Peter Klein is ready. I assume he'll have something for us at 1 o'clock because he's a broadcasting professional. Klein's next. Pinder and Steinberg. Pat joins at 2. And lots of hockey after 6 right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.